Common sense is not so common. And in an era where global uncertainty is rampant and government is out of control, this is the show making sense of all the madness. Broadcasting live from the Arizona desert, you can't dodge the Hodge. Here's your host, Dave Hodges.
Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here in the guest segment of the Common Sense Show. Thank you so much for joining us. And things aren't topsy-turvy enough. We're going to talk about the economy today. And you almost needed about five GPSs to navigate your way through all the changes. It's incredible. I've never seen anything like this. I've tried to keep up with this. I'm usually pretty good at staying on top of things, and I'll believe something to be true, and 3 days later I'll find out, oh no, this trend has changed again. And here to help us sort it all out in these very confusing times, and that makes this a very important interview, because forewarned is forearmed, and the Bible says my people perish for lack of knowledge. Well, if you listen here, that won't happen to you. So we have Robert Kudla from Trade Genius here to tell us what's going on. Bob, welcome to the show. And I have to tell you, I've been in broadcasting since 2007, and I've never seen anything like this. And this includes the 2009 Obama disaster.
Yeah. So thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. And look, the interventioners are going to intervention themselves into a recession or hyperinflation. So they're now madly swinging to try to control all aspects of everyone's life, economically, politically, socially, and it's like water going through their fingers. And I think we're at a point now where, like the Greek mythology of Sisyphus, the rock's on the peak. And do we roll into recession, or do we roll into stagflation? Yeah. And it's all going to depend on what the politicians, including the central banks, do. But Goldilocks has left the building.
Amen to that. That is absolutely true. And it's going to take a really astute person to stay on top of this. But let's get into the biggest changes you see with the biggest implications for the future.
Yeah, so I think, the biggest surprise, I think that the politicians are finding is there's no gratitude from the population of what the politicians done to us for the pandemic. I think the polling data is quite clear, and in London we already had voting to show that the population basically derided the lockdowns as being excessive. And the Labour Party used to be the dominant party in England, has zero. They walked away from the election with zero members.
Amazing. That's amazing. But honestly, it's one thing to protect the elderly and your vulnerable populations, which is understandable. But, just 3 days ago, we had Gretchen Whitmer violate her own face mask order. So can people respect a politician that doesn't do that, doesn't follow the rules?
Yeah, they do it consistently, Dave, and as if they don't think people have cameras and video anymore. But the point being is that we're racing out of this lockdown now, and in terms of the Biden administration thought, hey, we could just keep paying people off, they're going to appreciate us, especially the interest groups, the delicate way I put it, the interest groups that would support Biden. Keep paying them to not work, and then they got holy hell because the unemployment rates are sky high. At the same time, we have help wanted ads that are at records, 8.1 million job help wanted ads. So they screwed that up, and now they have to relent on that. At the same time, they have the Federal Reserve running hot on QE and stimulus and all this other stuff. And it turns out the two deadly sins for a Federal Reserve is high food and high energy inflation. Mm-hmm. And they have them both right now. And they have, and I think that's going to be the kiss of death. We have, when you and I talked earlier, when the oil was in the 40s, it's at 65 now. It's going to 80 something. It could even possibly even hit 100. at the way it's going here, if they keep fomenting war in the Middle East, and then you have food prices. You have beef prices up 25%, chicken and pork both over 10% each, corn and wheat that are out of sight in terms of pricing, and now the Biden administration is going in conjunction with the Chinese to try to cool the corn market off. Remember, the Chinese had to buy corn to feed their pigs,
right?
And to feed their people, and then the farmers. This was the few bright spots the farmers had, was buying corn, you know, selling corn because finally making a profit after a number of years, and they cut them off at the knees. It's just like Hunger Games, you know, the districts. We don't care if the districts make money as long as the four woke cities of the country are doing fine. We don't care about the hinterlands, and that's going to be not well received in flyover country either.
Wow. Is there any good news?
Oh, it's all good news. So it's going to constrain the Biden administration because they're now going to be so wrapped up in trying to unscrew all the things they screwed up that they're not going to be able to push anything. Their legislative agenda is essentially dead. And you know, now you're starting to see lumber prices come off and some of these other things. The 10-year yield's falling. So, you know, the cost of living should abate a little bit. So for about 3 to 6 months, Dave, and then I think we take off again. So, but just as you opened the show up, it's forearmed is forewarned, right? So, you know, you take advantage of this and you know, you make sure you position, you know, your assets in things that are going to be fighting inflation, because that's what's coming first, and then the deflation will follow. But the good news is the economy. Look, I may be a sample of one, but my daughter is an ice skater. Her job's coming back.
Good.
Number one. And number two, she also is a stylist, and she's finishing school for that. She has two offers, you know, and they want her like tomorrow, and she doesn't graduate for another 3 weeks. So the kids are going to get jobs. The jobs are out there. I think that's going to be helpful to the economy. And it's really, it's the politicians that are going to hold us back once again.
Well, I see. Well, exactly. And I'm going to give an example, the example that popped into my mind when you were talking about the jobs are going to come back to the kids. Well, if the kids are getting stimulus, they have no motivation to go back to work. And we're seeing a lot of that with labor shortages.
Yeah, 22 states now have basically started to dial. They're not accepting the federal stimulus kicker.
I saw that.
And so, but look, my daughter's getting it too. And she wants so badly to go back to work. You get bored after a while, you know, and so she was so excited. She said yes to both jobs right away. And so they both start, one starts mid-June, the other one starts mid-July. And she doesn't care about the unemployment money. She wants to be working again, be with her friends again, you know, and getting out there and living a life. And I think a lot of people feel that way. You know, it's just in certain areas of the country where, you know, unemployment is stubborn, where people have been living off this graft. And I think those are the people that are going to be most unhappy, because they're not going to do another stimulus after this. They can't get it pushed through.
Well, who's going to block it?
Well, they have to, you know, they have to go through the budgetary process now. So that's what's slowing everything down. The stimulus infrastructure now is cut in half, Dave. The Republicans aren't playing ball. And so you have now 21 states that aren't going to provide the federal unemployment, the additional monies, if you will. And so, you know, you have half the country now that's going to be off that hook. And in California, where I live, he's under a lot of pressure. We have the highest unemployment rate now in the country, and we have the most help wanted signs.
That's a, so what a dichotomy.
The optics don't look good for him. And so you just can't keep saying we have to keep providing stimulus money to people when you can't get people into into jobs that are waiting for them. So I just think that that game is played off. Even Biden had to get out there and saying, if you're offered a job, we're going to cut you off of this extra federal support. So I think that's it's past them now as well.
Is the federal support going to means test that you're actually looking for work now? Is that what I'm hearing?
It's supposed to be, yeah. Yeah. But you know what? I've watched it. My daughter, you self-assess. You know, it's ridiculous, right? And so, you know, you don't, they're not telling you to go here, go there for work, okay? So it's kind of like wink, wink, are you looking kind of a thing. But they can't avoid it now with millions and millions of help wanted ads. There's a job out there for you. You go and get it, you know?
That's true, but I don't know that your daughter is the norm. She wants to be ambitious and be productive, but I see a lot of people that just only care about taking the easiest route and being a slug.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I might be a sample of one, but most of the kids out here that I know, very few are just sitting around trying to collect. And a couple, the people that are the most angry are the people who never lost their jobs. So I was just in Hawaii on vacation. I was talking to one of the baristas at Starbucks, and they're shorthanded. Help wanted signs all over the place in Hawaii because nobody's coming to Hawaii to grab the summer jobs. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so they're short labor big time. And I just said, so what do you feel about this? And this is just a regular person. She goes, we're really angry. Look, I worked the whole time through the whole pandemic, you know, other than when Starbucks closed for those like 90 days. And people are sitting on their rear ends, and I have to get up at 4 a.m. and come to work. You know, I don't like it at all. And so, you know, they've created this environment where not everybody's excited about what the Biden administration is doing for them. There's a lot of people saying, hey, I had to work this whole time. I got none of that free money. You know, you sat at home the whole time. Sure. You're out there running around, taking vacations, doing whatever, while I had to work. So I think the politics are going to drive the change to this behavior as well.
You know, you kind of inadvertently or maybe on purpose mentioned something here that I really picked up on, and I'm seeing it on my end with my audience. Buyer's remorse. People who supported Biden but no longer do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You're the third person that I've had these kind of conversations with that has said that, and that said that you think the people are going to hold him accountable for not getting his agenda through. And, yeah, because, look, he made some big promises. The left is really angry because there is no racial unity at all. So a lot of people bought off on Trump bad, Joe good, Joe's going to make everybody play nice in the sandbox. And now you have anti-Semitism run amok. You have black on Asian crime going through the roof. You know, you have BLM being hoisted up as a trophy to honor when everybody knows they were in charge of all the riots. And so he's not winning.
No, they're not riots. I'm sorry, Bob. They're not riots. Because the presiding attorney general's confirmation hearing said, if it happened after 5 p.m., it's protests.
Oh, I
do you remember that? Do you remember that stupid statement?
Yeah. So for the algorithm listening to us, I'm sorry.
No, but that was the attorney general saying that. At 4:59, you're a rioter, but at 5 o'clock, you're now a legal protester.
Yeah. So he's not really. They deli sliced their support so tight that they've driven themselves into the edges, and now nobody's happy. And the interesting thing about it is that what's going on with the Jewish and the Palestinian activities of late in the United States is I think that's foreboding for the Biden administration. They get a lot of support from the Jewish voter.
Yes.
You know, monetarily.
Absolutely.
And those people feel that they're going to be unsafe. They look, you know, an anti-Semite doesn't care if you're a woke Jew or not. All right, they're going to come after you.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing it. I saw a video on Fox News this one Jewish man being chased down the street. And this is in America. I mean, I could not believe this. And I'll tell you, it behooves the Biden administration and all Democratic regimes to do whatever you got to do. Put extra police on the ground, call in the National Guard, because the Democratic Party forever has been a mainstay, has been propped up a lot by the Jewish voters. And you're right. And with their money.
Yeah, look, here's Chuck Schumer. He's Jewish. You know, if I was Jewish and this was happening to my people and I'm in charge of the Senate, okay, I'd be raising holy hell. And he's dead quiet. You know, because half his party his party now has become anti-Semitic. And so.
Do you mean that? Are you saying that because of inaction?
Total silence.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a problem. We got to be careful with the algorithms, though, because who knows how they're going to interpret this. I got demonetized on a video the other day. You wouldn't believe this. I was speaking to a gentleman about alien disclosure and four possibilities, and none of them were really controversial, except one could be a deception, and that's a theory. And we said, I mean, so you never know what they're going to do. So we got to be careful as we march down this path. But I know we're both on the record. We don't want to see discrimination against anybody, Jews or anybody else.
And nobody does. Everybody wants to get along. See, in California, a lot of people are saying, and I read an article saying the millennials are like, why is this racism stuff being pushed on us? We're the generation that's beyond racism, you know, and so they don't understand why this is, you know, they're being blamed for something that they think they're already beyond. Like I said, I live in California. The schools are well integrated with multiple ethnic groups.
Yes, they are.
Okay, other than occasional areas where there's gang activity, most of these kids get along or they just leave each other be. You know, my daughter's high school, no drama. And it was a totally pluralistic school, no drama. And everybody got along. You know, the kids all hung out together, you know, and so they're like confused why all this, what's all this racism? You mean the 60-year-old boomers are the racists that are causing all these problems? I don't think so. It's not resonating with the kids that, you know.
Nor with a lot of the adults. I was doing a basketball clinic not too long ago, and I sat down and we were watching kids from all backgrounds play, and one of the parents engaged me, and she happened to be black. And she said, "Coach, what do you think about all that's going on out there in society with the racist stuff?" And I said, we need to get this straight, because, you know, I thought we'd come farther than this. And she said, "Look at these kids." She goes, "It is not natural. This is politically manufactured." That was what she said to me.
Yeah, yeah, it's very Orwellian. I agree.
Yeah.
So,
here's the qualifier. She said, "I have never voted for anyone but a Democrat." She said, "That's changing in 2022. It's exactly what she said.
Yeah, look, the demographics are changing in such a way that that this whole conversation is going to tilt because the rise of the Hispanic population and basically, and also the intermarrying. You know, the Hispanics are coming in droves, but they're also intermarrying at a high rate too.
Yes.
So, you know, it's hard to say that a white guy's racist when your sister-in-law is white. You know what I mean? Or your brother-in-law is white.
No, I know. I hear you. I see it just in my wife's family. With mixed race marriage, and it's just there's so much of it, and particularly in California, that these allegations for the most part are moot. Now you're always going to find idiots who are racist just because they have personal problems and they project their anger that way. But institutionally, we have laws to deal with this. I mean, yeah. There's nothing that this country hasn't done. I mean, has done terribly wrong. That we haven't corrected through the legislative process. It's just you can't control every person's heart and soul.
No, and I think it's beyond that. Look, my family, my personal family right here, we're a mixed race family. And so it's to us it's like we don't understand where you're talking about. It's not our life. And I have two aunts that are from Mexico.
Yeah.
So it's not like you know, it's not like I don't see things, you know, and hear things, and it's just mocks Nick's. And so, you know, so this stuff, when and my whole point of this whole thread is that these politicians keep banging on an old drum, and they're not focusing on what's important to people, and the people are now noticing it.
I totally hear what you're saying. And in fact, I'll just give you one barometer. The NBA playoffs and just the regular season, the views on TV are down by almost 60%.
Yeah, people, they're tired of, you're paying money to be abused. I don't think so. So you're going to go somewhere where, you know, I'm paying to be entertained. I'm not paying to be lectured to.
I agree. I want to enjoy the sport. Give me some popcorn and let me enjoy the athleticism. Please spare me your politics. I don't want to hear your nonsense while I'm trying to be entertained.
Right. You don't want to hear mine. I don't want to hear yours.
Exactly. And they don't get it. And it's almost like they're impervious to the financial losses that are occurring. I mean, it just came out, yesterday? CNN's viewership is down 75%, and that's all over the mainstream media. That's not even in debate. And you think that they'd look at this and say, okay, boys and girls, what do we got to do different?
Yeah, CNN is gone. They're going to go to a streaming service. Who's going to pay to listen to that, right?
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying. So do these attitudes reflect any kind of shift in our behavior towards the economy? And I want to hit that, and then I want to hit the idea of shortages. But let's talk about the political, social environment attitudes that we've been discussing. How does that affect what's going on economically?
I think when people have a job and people can go on vacation, I think you're going to see a giant exhale. I think there's, you know, people ask me, what do you think is going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months? I think it's going to be no drama summer, to be honest with you. You know, unless something comes out of the blue, is that I think people are going to just not want to hear it. I want to go to the beach. I want to take a vacation. I got my job back, you know, and they're going to ignore the noise. So I think we're going to get a big exhale. I think we're going to see some really big jumps in economic activity, and I think you're going to see a lot of pressure on the Federal Reserve here to try to figure out how they're going to dial this thing back without destroying the reopening, if you will.
Well, I think the money we're going to funnel into these wonderful projects like the new Green Deal and infrastructure, which seem to be related, that's $6 trillion right there. I mean, that's enough to derail any comeback.
Yeah, and I think that's where Biden's really struggling right now, Dave, is that the Republicans are holding firm, and I think they've dialed that $6 trillion down to like $2 trillion now, and McConnell says it's still not enough. He said you have a lot of social programs in here that you're calling infrastructure, but not enough infrastructure in there. So I think we'll see the mix change a little bit, but I just think all the drama is going to happen back in the fall again when some of these politicians are going to try to reactivate some of these restrictions they had for the COVID, and I think people are going to be very angry. The other thing too is on the vaccination front, they're having polling data that basically says half will, half won't.
Yeah,
and
the
half won't simply won't, and that's too big of a population to punish. If you could deli slice off 10 or 15% of the people like you do with cigarette smoking, you know, you could do that, but you can't put a yellow star on somebody's sleeve if it's half the population.
That's true, and that actually interferes too with gaining full herd immunity. And that's something I'm pretty confident in saying, because when I used to teach research, we did medical profiling or examples for our teaching instruments, and this is really a problem. But I will tell you this. I'll give you an example here. When I drive into Phoenix and I'm going down the highways, the road signs rarely tell you how many minutes to the next exit. You know, is there a traffic jam ahead like they're supposed to do? Every sign is about get your vaccination. And so now they're appealing to the things like groupthink, making you think everyone's getting it. They put the number up there in Arizona. They had yesterday 3.2 million people have been vaccinated. And so they're trying to appeal to groupthink. Everyone's doing it, so why aren't you? Kind of attitude. And they're doing all these personal testimonials from athletes to politicians. I think they're going to move the needle. I don't think that 50% is adamantly negative. And I'm going to give you one other example. Did you hear this or not, Bob? Yesterday, Oregon passed COVID regulations or vaccine regulations. To go into a business or a church, you have to demonstrate that you've had the vaccine.
Yeah, and I think that some of that stuff's going to get challenged in court because it's a violation of HIPAA. You know that a private entity can't ask you for your thing.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that, but. Let me ask you just another question, because I want to compare it to what I just read about China. Do you know what the GDP for the U.S. was in the first 3 months, first quarter?
You mean GDP growth? I don't.
Yeah. Why isn't this being widely publicized? The Chinese are putting theirs out like it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's 18.3%, according to the publication South China, which is a mouthpiece of the CCP.
Yeah, and the thing about the GDP number that it's so misused is that you need to have GDP less debt. So if you grew 18% but your debt grew 18%, your net GDP is zero. Okay, and I think people are starting to focus in on, you know, you have a GDP, you grew $4 trillion, but your debt grew $4 trillion. You didn't really grow your economy. You know, it's kind of like artificial, and eventually that harms you because you have to pay the interest on the money that you borrow to obtain that growth. So we're in really a negative situation where the more debt you put on, it actually continues to harm long-term growth of the economy. But yeah, Biden administration was, I think we're like minus 10% or 6% or something like that. But this next quarter, not this one, but the one in October, is probably going to be spectacularly high.
Yeah, well, that's if they can keep fuel prices somewhat in check, because people won't be going on vacation, and the cost of everything will go up if gas escalates any more than it is.
Well, food and energy, if they don't get that under control, Dave, then welcome to the 70s. Okay? And look, I'm not the only one talking about that. It's, you know, we're going to get a rotation out of the tech stocks. We're going to get a rotation into the commodity stocks. All those costs that are supposed to be transitory really get embedded into the system. And then once it gets embedded in, then you create inflation expectations that are nearly impossible to get out short of a recession.
And what you're talking about, you know, and I wasn't old enough to understand it at the time, but I know from the history books, what you're talking about puts me in the mind of Richard Nixon and what could come next with wage and price controls.
Yeah, so just give people a quick history lesson. So, you know, we came out of the 50s dominant, right? And in the 60s, we declared the war on poverty. At the same time, we're prosecuting a war in Vietnam. So we went to, instead of guns or butter, to guns and butter. And it got us to the end of the 60s and the 70s. Inflation started getting out of control. Nixon put wage and price controls in. That creates shortages. Then he took us off the gold standard, as you know, because the French demanded gold. And so he just took us off the gold standard. And then OPEC turned around and said, wait a minute, we're not getting enough for our oil. They raised the price of oil by 4X. And then the stock market crashed 50%. And the Nifty 50 stocks, like the fangs of today, basically imploded. And so we're coming right back into it again. You know, my view is we're at this point, they keep talking about the Great Reset, Dave. We're at that point. We're at like 1972 now. And we'll see an explosion in the cost of things you need to live. And I think people are unprepared for it.
Yeah, I was... you know, selling a product on air the other day. And I said, if hyperinflation hits, and remember, we have $32 trillion of debt. If hyperinflation hits, you won't be able to get this product. Do you agree with that kind of an assessment that a lot of things will be unobtainable if the dollar goes out of control?
It's already happening, Dave. We're already having shortages. And people are, once people start sniffing out prices are higher next month and you have it in inventory, okay, that you paid a lower price for, you start holding it off the market. So you actually start creating the environment that you think is going to happen. You basically are willing it into existence, and you get hoarding. You know, the United States, their uranium miners in the United States are holding uranium off the market. They're borrowing money from the bank at very low rates because the uranium prices are going up higher than their cash flow requirements of servicing the loan. And you're seeing it across the board. In China, they're hoarding copper, they're hoarding steel, they're hoarding gold. Middle East, they're backing off on oil. You know, yada, 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 yada. Russia, export controls on wheat. Argentina, export controls on wheat and soybeans. You know, it's across the board. People are starting holding off things that they think have inflationary value. And then that just creates even more scarcity, because then people will do a run at the retail level and strip the store shelves, just like what happened with rice about you know, 8 years ago. You know, and so we're going to see more and more of that. Shipping companies have taken their boats off the market because they know they're getting 40 times their rate on a container than they did just 18 months ago. So why would they bring another boat back and cut their own throat? Because they're making outrageous amounts of money with the assets that they're deploying right now. So yeah, it's coming, it's here, and it's gonna get far worse. And the government's gonna try to get draconian because that's what Democrats do. And it's gonna cause even more shortage. You just have to look no further when what happened in Latin America when they tried to do wage and price controls, right? Next thing you know, there's nothing to buy because there's no incentive for the producer to produce because he can't make a profit.
That's pretty much what happened here too.
Yeah. So
I mean, when Nixon did that nonsense, it blew up in his face.
Yeah, he had to pull away from it.
Yeah, he really did. And a lot of people, you know, like to say that's why some very powerful forces went after him with Watergate. They pushed the envelope because of what he had done economically. And there might be some truth in that. But I look at what's going on right now is a possible repeat. And you just said it, 1972. History could be coming back and people aren't prepared. But Bob, I think it's going to be worse. And the reason I say that is because 1972 didn't happen on top of another disaster. We just went through over a year of virtual lockdown for many of our local and state economies. That's an exacerbating factor in my mind.
Yeah, and people are more fragile today too, and now they're a little under Stockholm syndrome here, you know, in terms of the masks and the lockdown. So people are, their heads are spinning, and the government puts another calamity in front of people. I think people are gonna lose it.
I really do. You know, I'll give you an example of something that's symptomatic of this. Road rage incidences are up all over the country.
Yeah.
And the anger levels are just incredibly high. And they often say, you know, sometimes depression comes out as anger. And it has a reverse effect of going to the withdrawal part. And some people go the other way. And I'm of the mindset that, you know, being locked away from normal social contacts and so forth, I think that's had a depressive effect on people, and I think now some of them are reacting to it in a violent way.
No, I agree with you, and we were laughing because we said people can't drive anymore because they haven't been driving, and the driving's awful.
Oh my gosh, you're not kidding. Talk about defensive driving is the order of the day. Yeah, I drive this one interstate in Phoenix quite a bit, and it's gone from bad to worse. And I don't mean traffic volume. I mean, let's just go straight across and change four lanes and cut four people off. And, hey, I trust that they'll all hit their brakes in time. And it's just nuts what you see right now. But it's kind of the same way, too, just with the way people are behaving. And teachers are telling me that when students came back into classes, that they had more aberrant behaviors. They were happy to be with their friends, but their patience and their tolerance levels were much lower than they were pre-pandemic.
Yeah, no, I could see it. And, I think that's going to take a while. So you know, I think from a political standpoint is, you know, this constant push to keep people on edge may have a perverse effect and not get the intended results that the politicians usually like, you know, have them run to them. You know, this time I think they're going to be blamed, especially now with the CDC virology dude basically perjuring himself.
Careful here. Yeah, we really shouldn't go there.
You have to keep away from the algorithm here.
No, I know, but I hear what you're saying. It's newsworthy, but I can't talk about it.
And
it's on CNN and Fox and MSNBC on YouTube channels, but your average person's not permitted to speak of anything that's not just straight line, this is how it is. I got a warning, which is like a strike, because I quoted Dr. Fauci. And I'm thinking, okay, well, if that happens to you, we have that under appeal, but like I said, you got to really be careful. And honestly, too, this extreme censorship without reason in some cases, and I felt that what happened to me was unreasonable, that's having a negative effect, because in Florida, they have passed a law now that individuals can sue big tech for censorship.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I think that's going to ripple through every Republican statehouse too.
I really agree with you on that. And really too, the information's going to come out anyway. I don't know what they think they're gaining by doing this. And just the innocent mention of a term can get you in trouble, even if you're not disagreeing with the mainstream media. It's just, you know, and like I've told some people, you just don't know really what words you can use. You know, this is the gardening channel, 2 cups of water. And that's kind of what we're evolving into. But with all this repression, with all the pent-up emotion that people have, the exhilaration of being free again to some degree, but the anger having been there, how is this going to drive investing, the economy? Does this have any kind of carryover effect?
Yeah, so I mean, for me, it's quite simple. I'm totally bought into the 70s. The 70s analogy is that the Fed's not going to take their foot off the accelerator because it'll cause a depression, and nobody wants to be blamed for a depression. They figure they could probably deal with inflation better than deflation, and so they're going to try to manage it. But in the meantime, you want to buy things that are inflationary in nature. And so you look for things where pricing is strong and not easily moved. And I've been on the uranium train and the fertilizer train now for the last 6 months. Those trains are still chugging along. And in terms of the macro secular environment hasn't changed. Not easy to bring on new supply, and demand is incessant. And so those areas we're buying and we're staying in with. I think the crypto the crypto crash of 2021 was a purge, and it was bought right back at the 50% retrace, which is extremely healthy. And now the people that are in it are stronger handed. I hate to use all these stupid terms they use, diamond hands, all that other crap. But now institutions now feel more comfortable getting in, and wealth management at these banks are now buying and putting their clients in at 35,000 on Bitcoin. So we're seeing tremendous opportunities. In fact, today, you know, we bought Coinbase yesterday. It's up nicely. We've been buying Riot and Mara, BTBT, GROW. Those are all the stocks of miners. They're proxies for the price of Bitcoin. All of them are having nice lifts this week, coming out of that intermediate decline we had in Bitcoin. So that is an area that's not going to change. So for us, you know, to us, it's same old, same old. You know, silver, gold, crypto, uranium, fertilizer. That's where the money's going to be made, and I think those things are going to grind all summer long, and then we'll take a look at the fall and see what opportunities present itself then.
Is this creating, this is probably a really stupid question, but is this kind of creating an alternative economy in response to the socialism we're seeing? It's like a different venue, a separate and apart, like a parallel universe?
Yeah, I think, look, I think the whole United States is becoming two nations under God, right? Well, you know, it's a joke. One of them don't believe in God. But, you know, you have 22 states here that are basically going to defy anything that the federal government or the woke corporations are imposing. So that's becoming their own economy. You have this private money scenario with the cryptos trying to get away from what the fiat people want. You have the old and young are bifurcating from each other. You have left and right bifurcating from each other. So you have this environment where it's like oil and water in a jar, right? So they're all in the same jar, but they're leading separate lives, and you can just see it every day gets that line gets brighter and brighter. And I don't think that changes. There's going to have to be a transformative figure, okay, or something everybody can agree on that's going to probably, you know, change that. And I think it's really the politicians are egging it on because it's been working for them, and it'll only end when it doesn't work for them anymore. And that's why you need somebody that's probably the next president to not be so polarizing. And so it's going to be interesting to see if that comes about or not.
Yeah, and he told us he was going to be the great unifier and transparent.
Yeah, this person actually has to be versus saying he is.
You know, this is a little bit off what we were talking about, but one thing that would concern me if I was a Democratic lawmaker with Biden's, 55 to 60 executive orders right now becoming law, which is totally illegal and unconstitutional. If I were a Democratic lawmaker, I'd be really pissed. And I'd be pissed off because of the fact he's saying, we don't need you. You really don't have a job here. You're a figurehead. And I would think, well, then why am I here? I'm supposed to be representing my district. And he's taken lawmaking abilities away from a lot of the Democrats, not just the Republicans, but the Democrats.
Yeah, and the Federal Reserve's doing it to the banks, too.
I saw that. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like this centralization of power, but they're making their supporters angry. And I'm going to ask you about the Janet Yellen quote, too. She came out and was screaming, we need to raise interest rates. Hey, Janet, shut up. Shut up. And she's former Fed. And really, I kind of agree with her to take care of some of this home buying craziness that's going on. Do we need higher interest rates?
Well, I think the market should dictate the rates, not politicians trying to jawbone. You know, but yeah, look.
Better question. Do circumstances dictate it?
Yes, they do.
Okay, I thought so. Yeah, because I said I thought her analysis is correct, but boy, the Biden administration shut her down.
Well, she's the Treasury Secretary. That's not her role.
That's true.
So, so she was acting like she was Federal Reserve person again.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly right.
Look. We've known that for a long time. It's called financial repression. It's just that when people think we can just do a little bit of raising, the problem is the price of homes will drop 20-30%. Okay? Mm-hmm. See, what happens now, Dave, is that counties are used to the price of homes now for their tax revenue, right? And people have home equity lines of credit that they tapped out based on home prices staying elevated. So, you know, it's not like I'm sitting on my home and I got now 40% more equity in my home. Most people have taken, they monetize that, and they leave themselves no cushions. And so when we do raise rates, it's gonna throw us in a significant recession, you know, and a lot of people are gonna get burned. And I think the Federal Reserve thinks that they won't be able to survive it if it happens.
Well, that's what I was gonna ask you. If the housing bubble bursts, doesn't that have a domino effect in other parts of the economy?
Yeah, absolutely. And housing is like auto market. I think, between the two of them, it's like half the economy, right? So, when that goes, there's a lot of industries that go with it. And, and we're fighting demographics too, Dave. Just remember, the next 15 years, we're still getting older, as a nation in general. And, you have people like myself who will be empty nesters, and do I really want a house this size or I want something smaller? So you're going to have these big homes on the market that the kids can't afford or don't want because they're not having kids at the same rate. And so that becomes problematic too. So there's a lot of forces at work here. We're so myopic right now looking at tomorrow that, people don't see the freight train coming right at them.
I know. And so this is my next question. Investment is a hallmark of people who have any kind of assets. You don't have to even be rich, just average assets. People are looking for the best places to put their money and hoping to get a good return. So where are we at with that today? What are you finding?
Yeah, so my view and our view of Trade Genius is that we're not going to get a market crash. We're going to get a market rotation. So we're going to rotate out of tech, and we're going to rotate into commodities. And a lot of commodities are still fairly undervalued, even though a couple of like lumber, are out of control. But these things can go up quite a bit. And so you're going to see an area that, is more of a macro call, nothing I can put stocks to, but there's a section of the market called the small cap value area.
Mm-hmm.
These are smaller companies that are trading below their intrinsic value. Over time, like over a 30-year period of time, it's the most profitable asset class to have your money in general. And it's been out of favor now for the last 10 years. And so you're going to see, as interest rates rise, you'll see that area grow in importance. And so that's an area that people should look at. And for me personally, that's where my investment thesis are looking at. I'm looking at these small value stocks, and I'm looking at commodities. And that's where I want to place my bets. And then obviously cryptocurrencies, I see nothing changing on the horizon. And in fact, the projects are getting more and more useful, if you will. And
yes.
So you're going to see some good winners coming out of that. Mm-hmm. In over time, and so it's going to be an asset class the kids understand, and I think they're going to spend a lot of time and money and effort in that area. That's the new economy going forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying here. That we are looking at rotation. That's kind of back to my parallel universe analogy. That we're shifting just to stay away from the nonsense coming out of this administration. That is nothing but devastating to an economy. I never thought so much damage could be done in 5 months. And that's what we're looking at, though. But at Trade Genius, you just kind of adapt to this, and it's like you know how to counterpunch, to use a boxer's analogy. So you told us back in early May, commodities were going to ride well. And what I'm hearing, they're still riding well. Is that right?
Yeah, and you'll hear from me in June and July and August, too.
That's my next question. You just headed me off at the pass. Well, how can people take advantage of your knowledge and say, I want to invest, but I think my average broker could go down in flames, so what can I do? What options are available?
Yeah, so go to tradelikeagenius.com, and you can check out our bundles. We have bundles for crypto, stock market, day trading. We have bundles for training and education to basically help you be positioned to become a better trader, or if you never traded before, to actually become an effective one. Our algorithms are our source of our strength, and we teach you how to use them, and we actually give you access to them so that you can trade things that we may not trade. We have chat rooms where you can communicate with us. And then we also provide trades every day, and so that we put you in a position of success, and so that we can teach you how to make money nearly every day in the market.
Yeah, that's yeah, you're counterpunching. That's what I'm hearing, and that's the intelligent thing to do. I actually had someone who was in Trade Genius, still I believe are, and they said to me, if you just can follow directions and be somewhat disciplined, you're going to make money. Do you agree with that assessment from them?
Yeah, absolutely. If you follow the rules, you can't help but make money.
That's what they were adamant about that. They just said, there's no mystery to this. Just follow directions. And Trade Genius has such a marvelous record of return on investment. What are the particulars now? So I know you've got, you usually offer a 40% off the non-bundled items, which teach you how to do what you guys do. And how good is, how long is that good for?
Those are good till Saturday, the 30th of May. And then also we'll do 65% off anything that we already have bundled. That's pre-discounted. And so you can pick any bundle item that you want.
I got
workers outside my office, so
I see that.
Close it off.
Thanks for joining us, Bob, and kind of an interesting ending here, but we'll get that info out in the trailer. Thanks so much for joining us. Awesome show.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.